KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. My guest is what they call a polymath, a multi-thread, a big talent, Robert Rodriguez, going back to El Mariachi to one of my favorite movies of this century, I should say, Sin City, which is an amazing film, which he co-directed with Frank Miller and took a stand against the DGA. His other films, of course, Spy Kids, Once Upon a Time in Mexico. His newest film, and it's a full-length film, Planet Terror, part of the Grindhouse films. Robert, first of all, thanks for being here.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great to be here.
But first of all, a lot of people are saying it's a vignette. We should say it's not a vignette. It's a feature-length film.
Yeah, people, at first, these kind of things, even with Sin City, you almost have to release it first for people then to know what it is, because they speculate for a while based on the trailers or what they've heard. I've heard people call this a parody of the 70s movies and vignettes. And then I think once it's released and people see it, they'll know that it's an actual double feature that we put together. Based on the experiences that we had growing up and even recently over the past 10 or 12 years, Quentin would show at his film festivals in Austin or even at his house, because he's a film print collector, double and triple features of movies he's either grown up with or discovered over the years. He's a big, avid collector. And he would put them as double bills, you know, two together with trailers in between at the beginning. And it was such a great night at the movies experience. But it would only be in his home theater that I would think we should recreate this night for people.
Well, tell the audience what Planet Terror is about.
Planet Terror is about an infection that comes back from the war that takes over this small Texas town one night. And the local go-go dancer, the wrecker, the sheriff, the docs, they become the heroes for the night to try to save the world because it spreads very quickly.
One of the things I think is really kind of cool about what you work is the way music informs your editing rhythms. And since you compose, I wonder when the music comes to you. Do you decide to come up with these rhythms as you're writing or as you're on the floor shooting or as you're cutting? When does music come into the picture for you? Because it's very specific to the way you work.
Yeah, you know, it's all of those. And that's what I got into scoring my own movies finally on Spy Kids, the first one. Danny Elfman sort of inspired me to go. He said, why don't you just score your own movies? You play guitar. He made it sound so easy. I went, really? Well, I'll go try. And I found that it was just so vital to the process of making the movie. I would end up writing themes for the movie before I even wrote the script sometimes. An idea of what a character sounded like musically would come to me. And it would be, that was the case with Grindhouse. I came up with a Grindhouse theme while I was just first starting the script. And it sounded kind of sleazy and grindy. And I thought, wow, I have to have an opening dance sequence to this. I hope Rose can dance. And certainly she could dance.
And you see my Rose McGowan.
Rose McGowan. And I thought that would make it even better when she loses her leg, that she used to be a great dancer. And the music just gave it a style and a sense to me. It told me what the movie was. And that became sort of things that I would play on the set, things that I would come up with on the set.
Would you actually play music for the actors to hear on the set?
I'd play music on the set for actors to hear, either my own or a lot of John Carpenter music. Escape from New York, I used a lot,
right.
or The Thing. Just to set them, after we'd shoot a scene, I'd show them the scene and I would put some music over it so they could get a sense of what it would be like later to know if it was working rhythmically and just if they were getting it across.
And Carpenter, of course, composed his own scores for his films.
He composed his own score. That's what inspired me to be a filmmaker, was John Carpenter, because of all the different jobs he did. And I thought, that looks like fun. I think I want to do that. And so I'll be doing music all the way through the process of making the movie. And then I'll just go start editing first. And then after I get an edit, I'll put the edit into my music system, write some music for it. And if I like how the music's driving a scene and the edits don't match, I'll go adjust the edits. So I tell other composers, they're probably very jealous that I'm like a composer who can go tell the editor to change the picture to fit the music. Since I'm also the editor, I can boss myself around.
You talk about Spy Kids. I mean, that first scene where we get to see Antonio Banderas and Carlo Gugino together, mm-hmm. It's got a very different rhythm from anything mm-hmm. you had done before.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really sort of like leisurely, and then things change.
Yeah. I remember what I was using for a temporary score was The Duel of the Fates by John Williams. And it's just I would play that to some other composers that are working on the movie, and I go, I need a number like this for the opening scene. And they just looked at me like, yeah, right, you're crazy. And we're like, we're just going to write something like that. And so I went home and did it, and I really broke it down, and I thought, wow, the size of the music, it's very few notes. It's almost like the less notes you use, the bigger it sounds. And so I tried it using Spanish chords and Spanish rhythms and a Spanish guitar and then choir. And it sounded huge. So I got to really figure out the simplicity sometimes. The best movie music is sometimes very, very simple. And I thought, wow, I think I can be a composer because this music in these Spy Kid movies especially should sound like it's written by a little kid so that you remember the tunes, you remember the melody. And I can write like a little kid because I'm in my, you know, early stages of learning how to write music. And so that's why I felt like I was able to do it on those movies. And then later got more confidence to do Once Upon a Time in Mexico, Sin City, and now Grindhouse.
My guest is Robert Rodriguez's new film is Planet Terror, a full-length film as part of the Grindhouse double feature. One of the things about Grindhouse that's really interesting, too, that sort of feeds into all your movies is these movies, and I think about the Carpenter movies like Escape from Precinct 13.
Assault from Precinct 13.
And even the thing is that they're all basically about these really sort of weird disparate groups of people who become a family to protect themselves.
Right.
And that runs through almost all of your movies, going back to the first El Mariachi, where the end of the mariachis get together. Mm-hmm. Even the Spy Kids are literally a family. Yeah. And in this one, too, though. And where does that come from?
Probably from me being from a family of 10 kids. I think I always identified with a group, you know, with a tribe. I can't seem to write a movie about just a couple of people. It doesn't seem to work. It always ends up being way too many characters that I usually have to combine at a certain point.
Because it's very much about people sort of like fighting to be heard in these movies. You know, there's one person who wants to be the guy, mm-hmm. and everybody sort of thinks he's the guy, which is the other thing that runs through the movies, too.
Right.
We all know who the guy is as the audience, but the characters have to figure that out, too.
Yeah.
Is that kind of a family thing, too, you think?
Probably. I was one of the quiet ones, so it was hard for me to get heard. You had to be really funny in that family and really fast, and I was not the funniest and the fastest, that's for sure.
You were the observer in the family?
I was the observer. In fact, I was also the historian. I was the one who was always videotaping and taking the photographs, taking all the family video, and my mom would get mad because I would never put myself in any of the footage. She said, "We're never going to have any pictures of you." And then once Mariachi hit and I started showing up in newspapers, I said, "Well, now you've got plenty of pictures of me." So she's perfectly happy. But yeah, I was really the observer.
One of the things, though, that I wonder about it because I know you've had your comic strip, Bedhead. I guess the thing for me is that you compose the frame the way comic artists sort of compose comic panels to me. I mean, that sort of way that you sort of like use depth of field in that way, that's more like, and I mean it's in a good sense, that kind of graphic artist thing rather than the way filmmakers.
Right.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. I mean, I learned photography when I was about 15, 16 because I worked at a photo shop. But even then, I was composing the way I would draw because I'd been drawing much earlier than that. And so when it came time to do Sin City, it came in really handy because I told Frank, hey, I was a cartoonist, Frank, so I know that filmmaking and drawing is very similar. And I think you'll just be able to come pick up the pen and do it easily. And when I make up new shots, I think they'll work seamlessly because all my stuff's shot in a comic book style anyway. So I don't think you can tell what shots of his were from his books and what's – there's numerous ones that I just made up and would frame. And he would go, oh, that looks great because I have that similar style.
But for me, I really saw that in From Dusk Till Dawn. That's where it really is composed in the very much comic book style, especially having all those actors in the frame, which is kind of unusual too, to get that kind of mix of people and then get those tensions going. Is that when you started to feel really comfortable with doing it?
I remember being a struggle, wondering, how am I going to shoot all these people and how do I group them? But it helps when you're – it really helps. It saves so much time when you're your own editor. I'm always thinking, how is this going to actually cut together? So I'm not just covering it and then giving it to an editor to figure out. I think it would be much more confusing and would not be, you know, as easy to follow. But I do remember it being at a certain point in the movie, there's several people standing around a circle talking about what they're going to do. And I had to just think, well, I had to start pairing people up or singling them out and figuring out in the editing when would, you know, Tom Savini walk off and do his thing. And I remember it just being a little exercise in on-set editing. And it's not like today where I actually have an editing machine on the set. And since I shoot digital, I'm actually cutting while I'm shooting now. So I can make sure a cut is going to work and show it to everybody and get them excited about it. Back then, since it was on film, you didn't have that. So that was much more difficult.
But I guess for me, though, just talking about this stuff, this comic illustration stuff, I wonder which of the artists or the strips or things that kind of influenced you as a filmmaker, what those would be.
You know, the stuff that I would usually collect, and I collected a lot of Frank Miller, actually, which is why I finally got the idea to make that movie. I spent like – I would walk into my comic book store and the comic book guy would go, oh, no, there's no new Sin City. So you'd know as soon as I walked in that that's what I was going to go look for. So I think it was because he didn't just draw his material, but he also wrote it. And a lot of times you would find – I would find that I would collect comics not so much for the writing but for the art, because the art was done by somebody else. And when you would read the writing that went with it, it didn't seem to go at all. So you're almost better off making up your own stories and just looking at the art, being inspired by the artwork and the framing and the compositions.
But there's always so much stuff going on in the background, though, mm-hmm. which is, to me, as much a comic book and photographic thing as is, in fact, more of those than the movie thing, really.
Right.
And that means that you sort of trust having a lot of activity. So even though maybe you frame the star or the protagonist in the center, there's still stuff going on that is affecting his world that he doesn't see.
Right, right. And I felt I just watched it sort of objectively the other night with an audience. I felt in Planet Terror there's a lot of design going on that I was didn't even remember doing within the shots, going, wow, that's interesting. I guess I had that idea on the set to have this wipe over in the same shot and then this other element comes forward, and it was pretty orchestrated. It starts to become a little more second nature after a while, which was nice to see. It was nice for me to see. I don't know if I'll remember any of it by the time I go back to shoot again.
Does that really happen for you, that you tend to forget things from film to film?
You do, because I don't do the same job. So I'll write and I'll write a script and I'll just start getting the hang of it, but then I have to go direct. And I direct for a while, but then while I'm directing, I'm shooting and I'm doing cinematography. And then I put that aside and I have to go into being my own editor and doing the music. And then I do the sound mix and I have to go back and relearn how to do a sound mix, because I don't remember what all the buttons do, because I've been using the buttons for editing, you know, so that they aren't the same. And when I'm done with the sound mix, I have to go start all over again. So you get amnesia for each job that you do. If that makes any sense, you're almost like clearing your brain out to relearn a whole other position. It's a whole other discipline. Usually you have several people doing these jobs, but you're doing all their jobs and you can't keep it all in your head. You almost have to wipe what you just did, start over, relearn, and then start all over again. But it's fun. It keeps it very fresh. You never feel like you're doing the same thing over and over, because you're having to relearn every time you go into it.
It's The Treatment. My guest is the complete filmmaker, Robert Rodriguez. His new film is Planet Terror of Grindhouse. It's got a great cast and people doing really interesting stuff. You've got Freddie Rodriguez, no relation, but a really great actor who really is playing it. I mean, he's really having a good time with it. You can sort of see that he's having a good time playing it. Rose McGowan, Nikki Catt, who's great, and Josh Brolin, Marley Shelton. How did you find the actors for this? I mean, were you writing for actors, or do you do that?
I do. When I have this big a cast, sometimes it helps to have actors in mind, and I didn't have any actors in mind. I did have Rose McGowan in mind for either the Dakota or the Cherry part, because I'd met her and just thought she was fantastic. And she's got to be in a movie front and center. She's about to get off her show, and I didn't know what had happened to her. I didn't realize she'd been stuck on a show for 5 years. I was like, oh, no wonder I haven't seen you in movies. I got to get you back in movies, girl. And so I was writing the Cherry part for her. But when I started writing the rest of the script, I was only about 30 pages in. I go, okay, I got to stop and just start casting. I have a few scenes that I can already start casting from, so I can start getting a mental picture and see who I want to work with and finish writing, like I'm doing with Rose, finish writing the script for them as well. So I kind of stopped. Freddie Rodriguez came in with his cool leather jacket, which I couldn't find a duplicate of, so we made him wear it throughout his own movie. He had to bring his own jacket, which is very Grindhouse. He played it so cool. I thought, wow, he's very unassuming. He's not very tall. I'm going to make him the guy. He's going to be the guy in this movie that's just beyond every action hero ever times 10. And make him very unassuming and mysterious and have him become this person. Marley Shelton, I'd been wanting to work with since Sin City, and I realized she should be Dakota, so I kind of wrote that for her. Josh Brolin, when he came in and read the one scene I had for the doctor, and he had that crazy beard, and we talked about going a little darker with it. I thought, yeah, that's a cool idea. In fact, we'll make him crazy before he even gets infected. So he's just already – he's more of a menace before he even has the infection than even after. So
that's the weird thing about this clinic where he and Marley work. You wonder, why would people go to that place?
He used to be a military hospital, and the guy that works with him, that kind of crazy doctor who's showing all the pictures and rattling off all these diseases, that's my real doctor. When I went to him to get technical advice, he was rattling off all these real diseases and viruses and things that could actually happen to create this sort of zombie-type appearance. it was just disgusting, the stuff he was showing me on his laptop. And I thought, okay, first of all that stuff you just rattled off, you have to say that. I'm going to put you in the movie and you can say that to the audience. And you got to show your pictures. So I just cast him in there because it gave you that feeling like, is this really my doctor? Am I really putting myself in his care?
My guest is the creator, I can really say this, of Planet Terror, of the Grindhouse double feature. It's writer, director, editor, cinematographer, composer. He'll do some other stuff. We'll talk about that when we come back. It's Robert Rodriguez. I'm Elvis Mitchell with The Treatment.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. My guest is director, writer. He hasn't acted yet, but that's only a matter of time, I guess. Composer, editor, cinematographer, Robert Rodriguez. His new film, of course, is Planet Terror of the Grindhouse double feature. But it makes me wonder, too, because all these jobs you do, as cinematographer and camera operator, mm-hmm. does it help you to direct the actors being that close to them? And does that change the way you direct? Is it
better
you're
right.
For you?
You know, what's nice is even in my first movie, you know, Mariachi, there was no crew. It was just me and the actor, and it was very low key because they didn't feel any threat of actually making a movie. They just felt very personal. And that's kind of what I've been able to keep by being the cameraman and the director, is I don't have to yell over a bullhorn or yell from behind a monitor what I want them to do. I'm right there very close to them. And it seems to erase all the rest of the crew in a way, because everything else seems to just fall away, because all the only voice they really hear is mine, and they see my face, and I'm right there by the camera, and you can almost block out everything else. So it really feels like it's just myself and the actor doing the work, and that's what I like about and find important about operating and being right there close to them, but also seeing what's going on and feeling what's going on. You can really lock into a performance and synchronize your camera move or your camera zoom to what you're feeling coming back from the actor. I mean, you can really be in a lock sync with them.
Watching that must give you a real sense of intimacy and also give you some kind of incentive to let the actors improvise a little bit more, because you're right there seeing, you maybe give them one take of the script and then let them sort of play with it a little bit, like you must have done with Nicky Catt, obviously.
Yeah, Nicky, he's like, can I play with this? I'm like, are you kidding? On Sin City, he wasn't able to play with anything because we're doing it right by the page. But even then, he would play with how he would read it, the tone that he would use. And so when you have a playful actor like that, it's just really a wonderful gift, because you just kind of wrote it in a vacuum. It was my way of writing it for him, but he kind of wrote it as well as we went on. And those are real gifts to you, because you're looking for inspiration. You're looking for things to react to. And as an audience member and you're standing right there, you can know if something works or not. And you say, try something else, try something else. And you know when you hit it. You know, as the editor, you know, I'm using that take. He asked me later, so did you use the line? And then I said, are you kidding? That's like one of the best lines. Of course I used it. We laughed on the set. It's in. You know.
So did you find that pretty much right away you found yourself less locked into the script and more about paying attention to the actors because you were that close to them?
The script we followed pretty close all the way through. I try not to improvise too much, because within a scene, it's easy to get lost and go, oh, this is kind of fun. Yeah, let's do that. But you're not stepping back and looking at the overall picture and knowing how it's going to impact other scenes if you start making stuff up too much on the set. You kind of orchestrated it as a whole piece when you wrote it, and you did it that way for a reason. And sometimes you can forget that reason when you're there and doing the day-to-day. So a lot of times I would have to remind an actor, you really need to show this moment, because it's going to pay off later. It may not seem all that interesting right now, but it will pay off later. And so let's do it as it's written.
See, I just think this, because I think the first great performance George Clooney gave was in From Dusk Till Dawn. Mm-hmm. I mean, he really is there. And I figure that's got to be because of the relationship you had with him being that close.
Yeah.
And just being around all the time, just saying, try this kind of stuff out.
Yeah, no, it was a real, real moment about 2 days into it, because he's used to not listening to director because he was on TV. And you can't listen to the director because you're kind of directing your character yourself, because there's a different director every week. And every week a director's trying to make him cry. He's like, no, I can't do that. I can't be crying every episode. I've got to kind of gauge that. So it's kind of self-directing in a way. There was a scene where he came in and found that Quentin had killed a woman in the hotel room.
The hostage at the beginning.
Yeah, the hostage at the beginning. And I wanted him to open the door and to keep looking at the body and talking to Quentin while staring straight ahead at the body, not looking at Quentin. But he felt he should turn around right away. And I was like, no, you really got to do it this way. You got to trust me because I'm going to be – I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to be showing flashes of what you're seeing while you're talking. And it's almost like so horrifying you can't take your eyes off her and the cameras will be pushing in on you. And you're still talking to Quentin, but don't turn around and engage with him. You almost don't have to. And he really didn't know if that was the right thing. He thought, I just feel like I should turn around. And I said, yeah, but then I'll just get your back. This will be much more powerful. And I said, next day, because I had to wait a whole day to show him. See, this wouldn't have been a big deal at all if we'd been shooting digital. I could have shown him right there, the edit. I had to wait till the next day to show him. And then he was like, oh, okay. And I can tell from then on, he goes, hey, it's really hard for me to trust a director, but now I'll trust you for the rest of the movie. So from then on, and this was only the second day of shooting, we had a great relationship where he knew that he was in good hands and that I was not just doing the directing, but I was also putting the movie together as the editor. So that really makes a huge difference.
My guest is Robert Rodriguez's new film is Planet Terror, a full-length film as part of the Grindhouse double feature. Nobody ever talks about you as being an actor's director. And the performances that people tend to give are obviously about the amount of confidence that they have in you. And it's because you're there doing all this stuff and they know they can trust you. Or do you think that's what it is?
No, that's a big part of it. I mean, people would ask, how can you work with people that are supposed to be difficult, like, you know, the Mickey Rourkes or the Rutger Hauers? And it's like, wait, you know what? These guys weren't difficult at all with me. I had a blast with them. And maybe it's part of that, might be part of it, is that they feel – okay, this guy is really doing a lot of different things. He seems to know what he's doing. We'll take confidence in him. And I think a lot of it is a lack of confidence in who's telling them what to do. You know, they almost have gotten used to having to self-direct themselves because they hear a director who's maybe not that confident coming and telling them something that they instinctually don't feel is right. And then the director can't explain himself. Well, then they're just going to direct themselves. They got to take care of themselves. So that's very understandable.
How do you end up talking to actors, though? I mean, because that's so – you've got to communicate that with them, that there are these things they have to do. At what point do you feel like you've got to get their confidence? Is it before you're on the floor with them or is it the script reading stage or when does that happen for you?
It's kind of – I think all the way through. I think they feel some level of confidence when they first meet you. Usually when I first meet with them before I even hire them, we have a long talk and I make sure I even get along with them very well. And if we get on well, then I know it's going to be a great relationship because there will be this trust that will develop. And wow, I can only say that shooting digital helps so much. I mean, when I first told Mickey Rourke about it, he said, I don't really like to look at myself on the screen or that. I said, well, you're going to like this because you'll really be able to come see what I'm talking about. And when we were shooting, I would be getting a take. And if it was great, it was great. But if I said, let me go look at the monitor and double check it, he knew that meant that something wasn't right and he should come look also. And I was able to just to show him what I meant, and then he would go, oh, I got it, and he would go back and he would nail it. So, and I can't imagine not having that as a tool to help the actor see what the director sees, and you don't have to wait till dailies the next day when it's too late and you're out of the moment. You get to see it right then, as if you're at the premiere, and it really helps because the actor can't see what he's doing a lot of times. He can't see exactly where you're shooting from or what you're actually picking up, what lens size you're on, and if something that the actor thinks they're doing is coming across, maybe isn't coming across strong enough, and you're directing them that way, it helps that you can actually show them.
I guess I also end up seeing that, too, with a lot of the women you work with. I mean, that there's that confidence they have, too, and you ask a lot. I mean, because there's always so much movement in your movies. I mean, people, like, not just walking but doing things.
Right.
And delivering the dialogue and having to sort of find the emotional center. Is that as difficult with actresses as it is with actors, or how does that work for you?
I enjoy, you know, you said Robert doesn't do any acting, but actually I get to do a lot of acting while directing. And even Mickey goes, you should be an actor. It's really good. I go, no, I enjoy acting off camera, you know, reading the other lines that you hear off camera to you. And I enjoy getting into the performances that way. And when people just need a direction, like, show me, you know, what you mean. Because it's a lot of, you know, action going on while they're talking. Very specific action, very clear placement. All those ideas really have to be hit, nailed on the head in order for the information to get across. So it's an orchestration that sometimes is very complicated at first. But they get it down. I mean, they're really there to do these things. And they enjoy, the more complicated, almost the better.
It's The Treatment. My guest is Robert Rodriguez's new film is Planet Terror. It's part of Grindhouse. You were talking about how your editing actually helped you sort of solve a problem because the MPAA saw the movie, and you sort of what happened?
Oh, the MPAA saw the movie, and there was like a scene where somebody's innards are getting eaten, their brain actually, and one of the in the main zombie type scene that's got to fulfill. I did it in one scene where it's got to fulfill the zombie expectations, at least for a moment, before the movie turns into something else. It's about in the middle of the movie. And I didn't really think anything of it because I just kind of cut it together. And when they pointed it out, I said, oh, I guess that's true. I guess they're there dining a little too long. So I went in there and did some – cut it way back. I just went ahead and just like, you know what? It doesn't really need this moment. It's probably a little too gross anyway. Let me just cut it down by, you know, a tenth. I mean, cut out, you know, nine-tenths of it. And put some more damage on it, almost this aging effect that I'm doing over the movie to make it look like an old print. So it's kind of more staccato and it skips a little bit and there's some repeated frames. So it looks like it's just spliced together from old prints. I saw the effect of it and it just looks horrifying now. Now you really can tell what's going on and it just looks more violent in a way. But they liked it. They thought, okay, it passes. And I thought, wow, you guys really turned me on to something cool. I should do that throughout the whole movie because it made the imaging so much stronger. There's something about that, the aging effect also, and the flashes and the splice cuts and the tape going across it. It almost makes it look more like a snuff film because it's so wrong. It's not a clean, pristine, Hollywood-produced image. And it makes it a lot more visceral.
How much do your dreams affect the way you work? I mean, because there's something, especially in this movie, that seems really kind of dreamlike.
Yeah. I showed the trailer to Jim Cameron, who's a friend of mine, and he looked at it and he said, wow, it's like unbridled movie making from the id. It's like it makes sense the moment you're watching it. It's almost like you're creating your own reality. Your own dream reality is taking place, and it's really powerful because if you really analyze it, it makes no sense. How is she shooting that gun? But it makes sense the way it's like you're awake.
It's kind of a dream
awake.
Logic.
Yeah, it's a very dream logic. And it makes sense why you're watching it. But that's it. And that's all it needs. And
well, how much do movies, do things, ideas to come to you from dreams? Because, again, this one specifically, but there have been other moments as well mm-hmm. in the movies and that seem kind of dreamy to me. This one is the most dreamlike, obviously.
I think the one thing that all my movies, people say, how can you do kids' movies and you do these kind of movies and how can you do such different fare? And it's really, they're all the same and that they're all fantasies. I mean, I love fantasy movie making and creating your own reality like that. I mean, in the mariachi movies, guys with guitar cases full of guns in this made-up Mexico. I mean, I remember Guillermo del Toro years ago would say, the Mexico that you create is a made-up Mexico. I said, I know, but people don't go there that much, so they don't really know. I can kind of make up whatever I want. They'll figure that's Mexico. It must be real. So you kind of create your own reality and your own dream reality.
Well, we're out of time, Robert. Thanks so much for doing
this. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
My guest is Robert Rodriguez, again, director, writer, editor, cinematographer, composer. We'll come up with some other jobs in the meantime of Planet Terror. It's part of the Grindhouse double feature. Our technical director is Jennifer Swiatek. Bob Carlson is the editor. This is the last show of the producer, Mary Bradley, née Holdridge, who's been here for most of the time the show's been on the air and has made it a pleasure and has actually gotten me here on time and kept me from even quitting a couple of times. So I want to say a shout-out for her. She's leaving, going on to greener pastures, leaving us behind. So, Mary, thanks for everything. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.